This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey, what's happening, everybody? Happy Friday to all of you. Nice to be with you on a nice, crisp Friday morning here in the city of Houston. Sean Pendergast and Seth Payne. Wild morning, man. Wild morning up on the northwest side.
So there was a house explosion up there, and we don't know too much more about it.
It was a business.
It was a business. Oh, okay.
It was a business. Yeah, it was a business. It looked like a warehouse of some sort. We don't know. I don't want to get too deep into details I don't know about, but apparently it was a business that exploded up there, according to the news.
People felt it all over. I didn't feel it. Apparently people inside the loop and up in the northwest area.
Jonesy.
Felt it. Jonesy, you felt it?
Jonesy lives in the northwest side of town. Jonesy, you felt the explosion up there?
It rocked our house.
Really? Wake you up?
I was already up, but it woke up my wife.
What time was it at?
Around 4:15, 4:25.
Man, that's terrifying for kids. I can't always think of it. There was being a kid and hearing about this or feeling that.
I've been watching the news this morning, and there's a neighborhood right near there, and these people's houses are devastated. Seth, you know what it looks like? If you ever watch coverage of an earthquake out in California and they go around interviewing people after the earthquake and they look at the damage on all the homes, that's what it's like. They were just in some woman's backyard who the entire back of her house is like caved in. All the windows are shattered. The furniture is all scattered all over the place. The house is like, the house looks like a broken bone where, you know, just the two sides of the bone are now just sort of
cracked apart?
Yeah, it completely shifted the backside of the house.
Yeah.
It was crazy.
And don't go snooping around over there because the air could be contaminated. They're advising people to stay the hell away. So don't go rubbernecking in that neighborhood right now. That's the last thing anybody needs.
That's right. It's Gessner and Clay is where the explosion was. Gessner and Clay. So stay away from there. So I'm sure Ali will tell you throughout the morning here on Sports Radio 610. Shout out to all the folks over there. Hope everybody is safe. It doesn't sound there was one person transported to the hospital. The most important thing is it doesn't sound like there was any loss of life in this thing, at least early on here, the reports. But the visuals of some of these houses are insane.
The ceiling blown out with all the windows are blown out and the ceiling is blown out of this one house.
Look at the garage door on that house. The garage door, it looks like some superhero came in and just ripped the garage doors right off of its hinges. It's crazy. So hope everybody stays safe over there. And yeah, stay indoors, man. You don't know what's floating around in the air over there right now.
So that would have been a bad superhero.
It would have been
right. What do you call evil ones when they have super? They're just a villain.
An uber villain,
but it's a different type of villain. It's a super villain.
Super villain,
A villain with superpowers.
That would have been something that the big dude that hung around with General Zod in Superman 2 would have done that to a garage door.
Yeah. Weird stuff. So yeah, everybody stay safe.
Yeah, so we're off and running on a Friday here. If there's any news relative to that comes down that we feel like you guys should need to know, we will keep eyes and ears on it for sure. So you're really excited for baseball season, aren't you?
I'm feeling myself.
That was a random tweet that I saw last night from you. You don't usually express that kind of exuberance randomly on Twitter.
I started shaking. I don't know. I just started getting this feeling of, you know what? Screw it. It's us against the world.
You had the same epiphany I had driving home from the Kolache factory last Saturday on 288 for no reason.
That's right. That's right. Just all of a sudden you feel like enough is enough.
Yes.
I've heard enough of the chatter. I don't even care if they hire a damn manager at this point.
Welcome to the party,
pal. I just have Verlander be the player coach, and then onward and upward. Excelsior, Semper Fi, I don't know, some kind of Latin something. I'm sick of it all, Sean. I'm sick of it. And then I get, you know, and then this is the problem. It's once you've accepted that whatever, the Astros did whatever they did, and you got punished for it, and you got to move on. It's the people outside of Houston that are driving me insane.
Yes.
Sometimes people I know that are reaching out to me saying things that just don't make any sense at all. Like saying, well, enjoy your plummeting batting averages this year. All right, I guess because of what? Because it's all happened. The cheating happened in 2017 early 2018. So I don't know exactly what your point is. And then you realize in a lot of people's minds, and I've read articles by writers now who believe the buzzer stuff is just 100% proven fact.
Are these respected writers or are these
bleep starters? How many of those are there anyway?
Well, I'm just wondering if it's one of the five or six that are out there.
It's the world's second oldest profession, according to Bobby Knight.
That's true.
And Bobby Knight don't respect you. I ain't got no respect for you either. That's my spiritual.
Well, you respect nobody.
He's my spiritual leader.
He's your spirit animal, Bobby Knight.
How can I respect anybody when Bobby Knight doesn't respect himself?
Exactly.
No, but enough is enough. And we're going to hear it all year long, but it does make you want to, it makes you want to lash out. And I think that's a perfectly fine and human and natural response. And it gets you pretty excited for a baseball season. I've got this image of Lance McCullers back angry on a mission. I've got this vision of Justin Verlander perpetually on a mission. Alex Bregman, Jose Altuve. First I mentioned the pitchers because they were pitchers are getting crap, and they obviously had nothing to do with this. It wouldn't have benefited them at all.
Well, they benefited in that their offense was scoring a ton of runs. You know
talk to Verlander.
That's true.
Verlander hasn't always had the best run support.
But in 2017,
What if Verlander said, hey, not on my watch. When I'm out there pitching, there will be no tub thumping.
Let me give you some stats.
And that's why he hasn't had good run support.
Ooh, I want to play this one straight.
So, yeah. So, I'm going in bareback, baby. That's what he used to say before he went out to pitch. So,
continue.
So I'm ready. I'm ready for this baseball season. We've got pitchers and catchers reporting very, very soon. Less than 3 weeks now.
Verlander could do this player manager thing. He's only busy one out of every 5 days.
I don't, you know,
he's managed the other five.
As soon as I tweeted it last night that I wanted Verlander to be the player manager, and I was joking. Pete Rose, I believe, was the last player manager in Major League Baseball.
Yeah,
that worked out well.
Yeah,
and
I don't know who the last one was that didn't gamble on his team.
Think about that.
I'd probably go back a little
further.
You
know what Bill O'Brien was in terms of his assessment of how much he could multitask? He was kind of like Bill O'Brien. He's like, I can do it all. I can be the manager. I can be the coach. I can gamble while I'm doing all of this.
O'Brien was like Pete Rose.
Who knows more about it than me? Everybody keep an eye on O'Brien. He feels like he knows more about everything than anybody.
Channel your inner Pete Rose.
So I kind of said it tongue in cheek, and then I started thinking about it logistically, how would that work? The problem with Verlander is in being a player manager, is that he puts a whole lot of work into his actual appearance. So I worry that it would mess with his.
Plus, 5 day process.
Plus, he likes to get 12 hours of sleep a night.
He does.
So squeezing in, burning the midnight oil is not necessarily the best thing for him.
That's not even a baseball manager thing. That's a coach thing. They like to brag about how little sleep they get. And we know he would be lying if that were the case.
I mean, in baseball managers, not as much so. But there are certain duties that I don't know if it would be possible for Verlander to get 12 hours of sleep a night and even be a phone-it-in baseball manager. Yeah. He's got too much going on in his day at that point.
Wouldn't you love to be a part of the group text the players are having right now? What do you think the tone is to the group text among the core guys on the Astros? I'm assuming there's a group text of like Bregman and Springer and Correa and Altuve, Verlander, all those guys.
Who are the two sassiest in that bunch? It's
McCullers,
Lance and McCullers. Or Lance Bergman. And Bregman. Yeah.
Yeah.
Bregman. I think McCullers and, what'd you say?
I said Bregman.
You said Bregman and then I said it too.
Sorry about that.
So between Bregman. Now I'm like my iPhone now. My iPhone autocrat.
I'm auto-correcting
still, it's
brain.
Been, how many years has he been up now? 4 years? So Alex Bregman, Bergman, that's what you meant, Seth. Go screw yourself, Steve Jobs.
iPhone, yeah.
R.I.P. And I think those two probably are pretty fired up about it. I think Jose Altuve is just probably doing his normal thing, going about
a lot of emojis.
Eating H-E-B rotisserie chickens
right,
and whatnot.
Right.
And let's see, who else would be cantankerous about it? I feel like Josh Reddick, because Josh Reddick is the first person they point to, and everybody says, this is why Josh Reddick
is still allowed on that group text?
Josh Reddick is...
Don't you have to be hitting over 225 to be on that group text?
Well, that's what he's sick of people making that joke.
Oh, okay.
He's sick of people pointing at him and being like, well, you know, Reddick wasn't doing it. Now that Tyler White's gone, Reddick gets a brunt of it.
Reddick's the guy. Reddick was lobbying for Tyler White to stay up with
Reddick
the team.
Reddick in his minimal appearances early on, you would have said like, oh, wow, Tyler White might be benefiting from this. But
yeah, maybe. Payne and Pendergast, Sports Radio 610.
Sitting here talking about the decision not to go for it on 4th-and-1. We're going to be talking about this for the next 6 months.
In the Chiefs game. We're still talking. Adjudicating a decision from a game that took place like 14 days ago.
I'm still
almost
at the point where if you're going to call a timeout anyway, why not just go ahead and challenge the spot on Duke Johnson there
for one. Yeah.
You're going to use the timeout anyway.
Yeah.
You might as well say, well, no, we're challenging the spot. And that way you actually, then the upside is that, okay, Well, if it's wrong, you're just losing a timeout.
Well, you lose a challenge.
You lose a challenge, I suppose. So there's that.
So that's and I
which
think,
I would maybe it would be the best for them because it would just keep them from challenging a pass interference later
true.
In the game.
That's a great point. Like, what are they going to end up using this for, anyways? Like,
it was a bad year for O'Brien in challenges.
Yeah.
And he's not typically. There have been some times, you know, remember when Leckler had to tell him to challenge a play?
Well, but no, Leckler gave him bad advice.
Yeah.
Leckler told him to challenge a play to gain like 7 yards in the middle of the field somewhere.
But having said all that, for the most part, I've been okay with his challenge strategy, including this year. I give him a pass on a lot of the passing PI calls and everything.
Yeah.
But regardless, I was actually looking at that video with Pat DeStat last night at like 11 p.m. I'm gonna be obsessed with that little sequence in the miscommunications. It's not even the decision to kick the field goal at that point. It's everything that fed into that decision.
Yeah.
The mistakes on the errors either from Deshaun Watson or Bill O'Brien as to what personnel was on the field. The inability to come up with a play during a timeout after that. The complete almost resignation and look of disgust on O'Brien's face, like he couldn't do anything about having to kick a field goal there. It was all just very unsettling.
It was a moment that it should be just a regular moment in a game where they just completely lost their composure.
Yeah.
It seemed like totally controllable. So, yeah, I was at,
I blame Mike Fires for that one, too.
Yeah, oh, yeah, that's what we get for
probably. Yeah, they probably had Fires up in the booth. They're like, I'm watching you guys.
Fires probably intercepted O'Brien's transmission from O'Brien to Deshaun's helmet.
Uh-huh.
Like, Fires is in there doing an O'Brien impersonation. Like, hey, Deshaun, just kind of, stroll around out there and do nothing for a little bit. Okay.
Uh-huh.
And then we're going to call a timeout.
It's only taken several weeks now, and now I've become that person that is blaming Mike Fiers, which I swore I wouldn't do. I swore I'm going to leave Fiers out of this, but now I can't help it. I despise him. It was the preacher after 9/11 that it said warned everybody, let's not become that evil which we deplore. As we fight evil, don't become that evil thing that you deplore.
You become the evil
I'm,
you
I'm
deplore.
Becoming a little bit kind of petty and snarky and nasty.
Right.
In a way, but it feels good. Like it actually
so you don't
feels
hate yourself
it
yet.
It feels good to be Astros against the world.
Okay.
I don't want to put any more reason or logic into it than that.
Yes.
I fully concede that things happened. I don't care. We're moving forward and we're taking no prisoners.
And wrecking shop.
There will be blood.
Yeah. Wrecking shop. By the way, the Astros, the only team whose win total off the board right now. You can bet on any of the other 29 teams, but the Astros off the board.
Really?
Till everything sort of gets, till they hire a manager and everything sort of gets straightened out.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I was thinking, my first thought was that somehow people were still thinking that
there's more to come.
These players who have proven themselves continually on the road over the last 3 years are somehow going to be affected by this.
No, it just has to do with still some of the uncertainty swirling around who the manager is going to be.
How much would a single manager move the line?
I think almost zero. I think the line was going to be about 96, 97 wins with AJ Hinch, and I think it's going to be 96, 97 wins with Dusty Baker or Jeff Banister, whoever it's going to be.
That's the sad reality of what we know about baseball now. So many of these decisions might as well have just be with the toss of a coin. Even the shifts, like as drastic and dramatic as a shift looks, those guys talk about shifts in terms of like, well, yeah, if we shift in this circumstance, it'll win us one extra game every 3 years. there's no discernible difference.
And it's not like AJ Hinch is up there scheming shifts in his office like play caller.
He's taking orders.
Coaches make a difference in football because good coaches can see things they can take advantage of and scheme up a play. AJ's, my guess is he's getting handed a bunch of printouts of things and said, here's what you do when Rougned Odor is up at the plate. Here's what you do and so-and-so.
I suppose he does have to make the extreme calls, like when you're using four men in the outfield and all of that.
Maybe.
Versus a lefty.
Maybe.
And those types of things.
Yeah, no, but it's not like he's up there. It's not like you need A.J. Hinch's brain to hatch these shifts.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Justin Reed gave us an update on his physical status yesterday. He wasn't kidding when he said, I'm going to go in and get this thing fixed. He had surgery yesterday and came to and gave us this update from his hospital bed.
Hello, everybody. Fresh out of surgery, just got me in a sling. Just want to let you guys know that I'm doing great right now. Surgery went great. I'm up in this hotel room, basically suite in the hospital. I mean, it's actually really nice to do a good job here. TV going and everything, about to eat some breakfast. But just want to go out and say thank you to everyone who shot me a text, a message. I got major love for you guys for all the support and love that you are showing me, and just let you guys know that I'm excited about this journey to recovery and getting healthy and being out there for the 2020 season. And yeah, man, just excited about it. So I appreciate you guys and major love.
I don't know if they still do the same thing they did when I had my multiple surgeries with the Texans. But
it was a nice suite he was
there's in. There's kind of a swank floor of the hospital, which is it was one of the some of the better vacations I've been on were recovery from surgery at the hospital. They used to I honestly used to ask to stay extra days there, and they would never turn me down. It would be weird. Now that I know, this is a problem when you're a player. You spend your whole life not paying for any of these medical expenses. You know, you go up through college, it's taken care of from the university. Right. Then you get in, I didn't know what a medical bill looked like until I got out of the NFL for the most part. So I'm just thinking like, wow, nice of them to do this. I can only imagine how much it costs to stay in those.
Dude.
That's the insurance company's not paying for that part of it. They're not paying for the swanky part.
No,
that part, that floor of the hotel/
he called
hospital,
it a hotel.
It feels like a hotel.
It looked
with
like
room
one.
Service and everything.
It looked like
I
one.
Mean, it would be crazy because my family would come to visit me and I was always drugged up, so you know I couldn't I didn't know too much about. But there'd be like you know sheiks from the Middle East fly over with their entire family on the Gulf Stream so that they can get service, they can get treatment at the medical center,
yeah.
You know, and then like these, some of the old, when I was there at one point, there was, I have to ask my wife who it was. It was a former president's family that was there. It's kind of weird.
And Seth Payne.
Yeah. And that, and me screaming and yelling because I don't recover from anesthesia. Well,
you don't?
No. Well, one time I had a really bad, there were complications during the surgery. It just ended up being a lot more intricate than they thought it was going to be. So I was under for a long time.
Oh.
And I came out of it, and I was, you know what I realized after a time, because I had so many surgeries, I started to figure these things out. I'd be under caffeine withdrawal a lot of the time. So I drank a lot of coffee. So by the time I got out of the surgery, it wasn't just come out of anesthesia. It was like noon or 1 p.m., and I hadn't had any coffee
yet. You're foaming
yet.
At the mouth.
I'm like freaking out, yelling at my wife and everything.
Well, Gary and Conley, we should update this too. That was Justin Reed. So Justin Reed, shoulder, going to be ready to go. He'll be ready to go. Gary and Conley had a screw removed from his right ankle.
You know what that scares me? You know why? Sounds a little bit too much like who? Kevin Johnson.
Oh, yeah.
Remember when we were screwing around with his foot?
His foot,
LOL.
Yeah.
It was.
He's expected to be good to go for off-season activities.
These feet can get, there's many, many bones in the feet.
There are.
Like at least three. And they're very, they work together very intricately.
Yeah.
So it's not as simple as, hey, we slapped a screw in there and then it healed and then we fixed. I always get nervous about these feet deals.
So two procedures in the secondary yesterday, Justin Reed's shoulder, Gary and Conley's ankle. Everybody seems to be okay. So I want a Titus Howard update, by the way. How's the knee, big fella? I need to know.
Yeah.
I need to know.
He should be. It felt with him because he tried to come back from the MCL and it just wasn't happening. So it felt like hopefully that was just more of a maybe he had a meniscus tear or something that was bleeding, but hopefully not like actual serious complications.
Pain, Pendergast, and about to be joined right now by our radio.com. NFL Insider Ross Tucker, Insider Calls, brought to you by the new gas-powered Sprinter from Mercedes-Benz Vans. You can catch Ross every weekday on Home and Home, his show on radio.com/home, or search Home on the radio.com app. Ross, great to talk to you as always. How are you? Which game did I hear you doing sidelines on this weekend?
So first of all, I'm not that great. My daughter tickled me last night when I was not ready and I threw my back out. That is life as a former player. It happens like 4 to 6 times a year. All I need is like, honestly, if I sneeze and I'm not holding something while I sneeze, any like quick movement and I pinch the nerve in my back again. So when my show starts in an hour, Home and Home, which people can listen to on demand because I don't want them to stop listening to Pain and Pendergast, I will be having an IPA right when the show starts.
Yeah.
And I may even have an IPA plus medication, which is my version of going to the doctor to try to make my back feel a little bit better. I felt awesome Sunday in San Francisco. The weather was glorious. The only bummer was that the Packers defense didn't play any better. You know, I wanted a close game, and it was crazy. I mean, it was like every run by the 49ers legitimately the stadium like started to stand up. Everybody's like, oh no, the safety tripped him up. Oh, Jair Alexander just got, like, it felt like it was going to be a house call every single carry. Can't ever remember that in an NFL game before.
I think that Ross, I go back to my rookie year when we played Denver for the first time. I went up against that rushing attack, and it was unlike anything I'd ever experienced. When you try to face a team that runs the zone scheme well, and we've seen it here in Houston, what it looks like when it's really firing on all cylinders with Kubiak, and of course Kyle Shanahan is all part of that lineage. But I remember thinking back in 1997, well, gosh, everybody's going to start running the ball this way, right? This must be like the wave of the future. And you fast forward 20-plus years, and it's just, it's the teams that know how to coach it and do it well. What's the difference between the teams that can run it well and the teams that can't?
I would say commitment and teaching. I think you're right. I think a lot of people tried it. Yeah, I can remember when we were in college that, you know, it was right after the Broncos had won those Super Bowls, and then Michigan was doing a lot of that kind of stuff, and they won the national championship. So we started to try to do it at Princeton, where I went to college, and looking back on it now, like, they taught it totally wrong.
Yeah.
I mean, totally wrong. Like, they thought the offensive tackle against, like, you'll appreciate this, Seth, like an underfront, which is a nose tackle to that side and a defensive end on the outside shoulder of the tackle.
Yeah.
They thought the tackle should get outside of the defensive end, and the right guard should be able to hook the defensive end. Like, in the NFL, if a five technique loses two gaps because the right guard hooks him, he's fired after that game. like, that never happens. Yet, looking back on, I get so frustrated now because we weren't very good in college, and you look back on it now, and it's because they were asking us to do stuff that they didn't realize was impossible and stupid. What you really do is you try to stretch that guy so he stays in his gap, and then you throw him out where he knows he's supposed to be. You get him going that way, go, and then you toss him out that way,
yeah,
and create more, you know, horizontal space doing that. I'll tell you the one thing, though, that's really interesting. I don't know how this relates to the Texans. It probably doesn't, but that I think is really interesting about the Niners is they've incorporated a lot more gap scheme, a lot more like inside traps. Like, it's a lot more than just the zone scheme. And what I think makes them so good, like, their line's good and those guys work together. None of them individually are like great players, but they work well together as a unit. What makes them truly special, and it's kind of like zigging while everybody else zags, is most teams don't have a fullback, and most teams, when they do run it, they run away from the tight end because their tight end stinks as a blocker. The Niners are the total opposite. They have a fullback in like every play, and they run it to the tight end. So what I've noticed is that, you know, some of the outside backers and even safeties, they don't really know how to fit against those 21 personnel runs, and they don't really know how to take on, you know, fullbacks and tight ends in that manner. And the two guys for the Niners are like absolute studs. I'm on the sideline watching them pancake dudes, kill them. I mean, that's why they were getting the edge as much as anything else. Their tight end and fullback are awesome, and these guys don't know how to take on those blocks.
Yeah, space. Ross, you know, it's interesting because now even when they're scouting guys like linebackers and safeties, like they don't even really look at how well they stack guys and shed anymore. They just want to see if they can run or not. So there's almost like a lost art to playing old school physical football when they have to take those guys on. And it's like you're exactly right. The 49ers, it's not all zone scheme. And a lot of that started back with the Texans when Kubiak was here with Mike Sherman, and Sherman had a different, you know, style. And they just kind of realized, okay, there's times where you can't just stretch everything out. There's times where you just got to hit it up the middle. And then those two different modes complement each other. But I'm with you. I feel like the 49ers, for all of what people talk about with Kyle Shanahan's X's and O's genius, the most impressive thing to me about Kyle Shanahan is how well coached they are in their technique, and that the wide receivers give a damn about blocking downfield, and that all these guys just know exactly what they're doing. And frankly, it's a level of competence that I just don't see from the Texans offense. You know, I, and I, we're, I watch the Texans offense operate, and especially I watch as they block, and then I watch the 49ers block. And my question for you would be, how close are the Texans to that? How achievable is that, potentially?
They're not that close to it. But what I would say is, I don't know many teams that are.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, you're exactly right. You know, their whole line, their fullback, the tight end, the receivers, they all block like they love it. You know what I mean? Like, most wide receivers are like willing blockers. You know what I mean? Like, they know they're supposed to, but they want to make sure that nobody rolls up on the back of their legs. A lot of the tight ends now are more or less like willing position blockers. Every dude for the Niners, like, they have like my mentality when I played. Like, they're not just trying to block. They're trying to like pancake guys, and they look like they're having the time of their life. Like, I'm on the sideline as Kittle pancaked B.J. Goodson, a Packers linebacker who was horrific in that game. And he gets up and, like, I don't know if he rolled the dice or rolled the bowling ball. He did, so, like, it was like he was making gestures after his blocks like it was a big third and eight catch where he ran over two guys. Like, these guys literally have as much fun blocking as they do catching the ball or getting the ball. And I actually think the genius of Shanahan is that he just keeps running it. You know, I just think so many coaches on some level are, I don't know if they're insecure or what, but I don't think anybody thinks that they get called a genius or a guru by calling 47 runs in a game. You know what I mean? Like, they spend all week coming up with these fancy pass patterns and all these different route combinations and these play action passes. And it's like they want to show them off. And I think the genius of Shanahan, and thank goodness for him, is like, we're just going to keep running the ball outside zone every play. Every once in a while we'll run a boot or we'll run a reverse to Deebo Samuel. But, like, to me, the genius is in his repetition and simplicity and his lack of ego that he needs to show you his fancy play-action pass schemes.
Ross Tucker joining us on Sports Radio 610. Ross, Eli Manning's having a press conference later on today. My guess is it's going to feel more like a celebration of a career and I hope they do it like
when somebody has filmed themselves and they played at their own memorial. I hope they filmed it elsewhere. And Eli's not even there.
A lot of eulogies.
Light some candles up there.
Right,
and like just
right.
Yeah.
Where do you come out on Eli's body of work as pertains to this debate that's been, it's been ongoing for years, but it's obviously picked up steam the last 2 days on his Hall of Fame chops?
Only guy I can think of, and I tweeted this during the season, at Ross Tucker NFL, who every time he took the field at the end of his career, he actually hurt his Hall of Fame candidacy.
Mm.
You know, for a lot of guys, the longer you play, the more numbers you stack up and you rise up the charts and you're third all-time rusher like Frank Gore or whatever. And longevity is usually a real plus and a real positive for guys' Hall of Fame candidacy. I actually think Eli is probably the only guy I can think of that I believe the last couple of years really hurt his Hall of Fame legacy. I think if he retired 3 years ago before he got benched twice and before he lost a bunch of football games and played really poorly, retired at 35 or whatever, I think he would have had a stronger argument. I still think he's ultimately going to get in. Two Super Bowl MVPs and never missed a game. And his last name's Manning, you know. And by the way, all the writers like him because he was nice and respectful to all of them. So I think he gets in, but I've never seen anything like it. I tweeted 2 days ago, guys, or I guess a little over a day ago now, that he's one of the few players I can think of that there's a big faction of people that think he's overrated, a big faction that think he's underappreciated. So I gave the poll options. We had almost 10,000 votes. The options were overrated, underappreciated, or neither. It finished 33%, 33%, 33%. Like, if I
it solved people, nothing.
if I asked people, hey, try to make this poll so it's 33% each, they wouldn't be able to do it.
Look,
you know what I mean? Like, That is absolutely unheard of. And I guess I would say, I feel like there were times in his career where he was overrated, where people talked about him like a top five quarterback, but people just were so critical of him the last few years and just killed him so much on social media that he almost became underappreciated. And I appreciate him never missing a game. That's crazy to me. And also the way he handled everything with class the whole way through. I think both of those are why I would probably put him in the underappreciated category.
Ross, this is the one thing, because I hear everybody's arguments and how much importance we should attach to the Super Bowl MVPs. I'll say this. I'll see those arguments as long as Justin Tuck gets into the Hall of Fame first, because Justin Tuck, in the first Super Bowl, a game that was won 17-14, Justin Tuck had two sacks. The second Super Bowl victory, in a game that was won 21-17, neither of those offensive juggernaut-type performances, Justin Tuck had two sacks again. In two Super Bowls, Justin Tuck had four sacks. He was All-Pro twice in his career. And I don't know.
Two more times than Eli.
I wonder where are all the Giants fans clamoring and insisting that Justin Tuck is a Hall of Famer as well? I haven't heard a single damn thing about Justin Tuck.
It's funny that you say that, because yesterday on Home and Home, Nick Costos joined us. He's a diehard Giants fan, and he said he did think in one of those Super Bowls that Justin Tuck should have been the MVP and that he was more deserving of the MVP than Eli was. But it is – I've never seen anything like this. It's going to be the most interesting Hall of Fame debate ever, because people believe so strongly and they're so passionate on both sides of the argument. Like a lot of guys, it's like you kind of like if you go through the guys this year, right? Alan Faneca, yeah, he's a Hall of Famer. He'll get in eventually. Steve Hutchinson, yeah. Baselli, he was awesome. Yeah, I think he should be. Like most guys are like that. Eli is either absolutely or no way.
You right, know, right. Like, I've never seen a more marginal candidate.
15, you're like, yeah, I'm okay with that guy. Eli's the one that, like, I think he eventually gets in, but it might be a while.
I've never seen somebody that's so contested have so many people say, I don't see why this is even a debate. Oh, there's not even a debate. Like, yep. That seems to be the leading argument right now.
Yes.
And it's driving me insane.
Yeah.
I'm not even going to debate
this.
The
no-brainer.
Yeah.
Shut up. My big thing is if you're the person that says this shouldn't even be a debate, or if you didn't vote for Lamar Jackson for MVP, you should have your vote taken away. That is the antithesis of everything I believe and everything our society should be about. Taking away a vote, like people said that they should take away votes of the three guys that didn't vote for Lamar Jackson for first team all pro quarterback. I'm okay with people voting for Russell Wilson. I'm okay. If you say, listen, Lamar benefited greatly from Greg Roman's offensive scheme and teams having no idea who even had the ball on half the plays, and Russell Wilson had to bring his team back from all these deficits and win all, I'm okay with that. Like, now I might disagree and I might say I'd still vote for Lamar Jackson for the MVP, but this groupthink and this, I won't even debate, you know, I won't even debate and not listening to the perspective or point of view of someone who disagrees with you. That's how we got in this mess in the first place in our society.
Ross Tucker, he is our Radio.com Sports NFL Insider, and Insider Calls brought to you by the new gas-powered Sprinter from Mercedes-Benz Vans. You can catch Ross every weekday on Home and Home. That's his show on Radio.com. You can go to Radio.com/home or search Home on the Radio.com app. Go check it out. Ross, we appreciate it. We're looking forward to previewing the Super Bowl with you next week, man.
Yeah, I think we just figured everything out. I think we just did it. I think we just solved everything. I'm glad.
All right, well, cool.
Not
well,
even
we'll
a
just
debate.
We'll just exchange recipes or something next Friday.
See you, dude.
All right, see you, Ross. Have a good show. He brings up Eli Manning, and I think you and I both established over the last day or two, Seth, that we are both. I am a no on Eli Manning for the Hall of Fame. Are you a yes or a no?
Oh, I'm a no.
Yeah, like, that's what I thought.
I don't think it's even a debate. Honestly, I had a couple.
Get Ross back on the phone so he can listen to Seth.
It's just funny that
it's a no-brainer.
It is funny that Eli got the MVP in those games, too, because of two individual pass. They were not good offensive performances in those games.
They weren't.
It was, they were great. They were incredible, but it's... He wasn't a top five quarterback ever the entire time he played.
He wasn't.
I honestly, and that's why I'm saying sarcastically, and these dullard Giants fans can't even figure it out. Look, Seth, you seriously think Justin Tuck is better than Eli Manning? Should he be in the Hall of Fame? No, my point is, if you're going to use the Super Bowl MVPs as the sole reason he should be in the Hall of Fame and ignore everything else they've done in their career, then go ahead and slap every guy that played on those teams in there. Because he got those MVPs because of two plays and because he was the quarterback. There were other guys that had great performances on those games.
Yeah.
And the defensive players alone. Put the whole damn defense in there.
Yeah.
Put that guy that got – the guy that came off of substitute teaching, that linebacker, that came in and made a couple of key plays.
Make him the MVP
of that game.
So I'm prefacing this by saying I'm a no on the MVP – or no, I'm a no on Eli for the Hall of Fame. However – in the spirit of what Ross Tucker just said, I'm willing to acknowledge arguments that make me think about it a little bit. And I will credit our former colleague Nick Wright, who had this argument yesterday on his TV show. I saw the cut-up of it on Twitter. And he gave an argument that made me think, okay, maybe he has a better case than I thought. He'd still be a no for me. Mm-hmm. However, I thought this was an interesting angle to come at it with. And the argument that Nick made the argument first that don't bring up all these volume counting stats because that actually works against. If you start to get into a statistical argument
then
about Eli Manning,
it just looks like a guy that was adding on at the
yeah,
end of his
it is,
career,
the stats. There are too many stats you can argue against Eli
right.
to trump the stats that people used to argue for Eli. The argument Nick used was this. He said that if you have a regular sort of average career like Eli, you need something spectacular in the postseason in order to raise the level of that career. And the question was, is what Eli did, not just the two Super Bowl MVPs, because that's a subjective thing that a bunch of writers are giving to a guy that's usually very narrative-based, as you just said. He's a quarterback. But Nick pointed out some granular facts of Eli's playoff runs that I thought were relevant, that made me think, like, okay, he's got a better case than I thought. And the main one was this. In his two playoff runs, first of all, he had to win four games in each of them, in part because they weren't very good, nor was he in the regular season, understood. But in the two playoff runs, in the 2007 playoff run, they had to go on the road three times and beat an undefeated New England team. And two of the wins on the road were against a 13-3 Dallas team mm-hmm. and a 13-3 Green Bay. In Dallas and in Green Bay, and then you beat what was angling to be the best team in the history of the sport in the Super Bowl. That was 2007. In 2011, they beat three 13-3 teams on their way to winning the Super Bowl. They beat Green Bay in Green Bay. Again, that was the 15-1 Aaron Rodgers team, a one seed. They then beat the Jim Harbaugh coach 13-3 team in San Fran in the NFC title game. And then they beat New England again in the Super Bowl. New England was 13-3 that year. That was number one. The second thing, real quick, this one's quick, he brought up, was just a comparison with Peyton. In Peyton's two Super Bowl runs that Peyton ended up winning the Super Bowl because he did lose one Super Bowl, Eli's stats are all better than Peyton's, and they're all good stats. In his two Super Bowl playoff runs, Eli, 63% completion, 7.5 yards per attempt, 15-2 touchdown to interception, and a passer rating over 100. Peyton, 60%, 6.4 yards per attempt, a 5-8 touchdown to interception, and a 72 rating. Granted, one of those runs for Peyton was when he was noodle arm Peyton at the end of his career, but I thought that was interesting. The strength of schedule of the two playoff runs was the one that struck
right,
me.
Which is a great argument for that team doing a great job. They never scored more than 24 points in any of those. This notion that somehow Eli strapped these guys on his back and dragged them to it. The Giants' defense had not been good that first year. Let's look at, so that first year in the 2007 Super Bowl, for 2007 season.
Yeah.
The defense hadn't been good for most of the year, and then all of a sudden they came into their own at the end. They held the Bucs to 14 points. They held the Cowboys to 17 points. They held the Packers to 20 points and an overtime victory. And then they held the Patriots to 14 points. Yet somehow it was Eli's brilliance that dragged them to a Super Bowl. It was a hell of a team effort. It wasn't some magical run by Eli Manning.
Right.
It was, and even if so, then okay, great. Then then Flacco was one game away. Nick Foles, if he just wins one more Super Bowl, should be in the Hall of Fame. The only arguments I'm hearing about Eli Manning are concerning, A, his durability. Okay, great, fine. Especially you're going to count these last 3 years where he's just a shell of a football player out there. You're going to credit. The worst thing he did for his team was remaining healthy the last 3 years. He should have had a career-ending injury, and the Giants could have moved on.
Then he'd be in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, exactly. His arm's been a noodle the last 3 years.
Yeah.
And and their arguments about the Super Bowls and the Super Bowls alone. And I just, that's not enough for me.
Yeah.
You got to show me something that makes me feel as good. If anybody in their right mind, is there a single Giants fan out there that thinks he was anywhere near any of these top quarterbacks of the last couple decades? And no, they don't.
Yeah. I don't know. Giant fans might. They're a little wackadoo. The thing that really hurt my soul was McClain tweeting yesterday that Eli's a Hall of Famer, because I think McClain has been on the other side. I think he's been on our side of the argument. And I feel like McClain's getting swept up in all the force feeding of Eli. There have been two things I've been force fed this week that are making me hate those things more. One is Eli Manning's Hall of Fame candidacy, which I hated to begin with. Two is Zion Williamson, who I think is a delightful young man, but ESPN is force feeding him like he's the next LeBron James.
Yeah, that's what you got to do, though. It'd be good for the NBA if he is the next LeBron.
Well, it'd be good for ESPN, who is force feeding us Zion Williamson.
Yeah, but go for it. I'm all about it. Look, let's sell more sneakers. You know what? Sneaker culture has gotten a little. It's gotten a little too broad and diversified and whatnot. We need to go back to having one big sneaker company. Who is he? Is he a Nike guy? I have no idea.
Zion? I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. He blew out a Nike shoe his 1 year at Duke. Remember?
He ripped right through it.
Right. Yeah, he ripped right through it. All right, we're off and running here on a Friday.
Yeah, he's definitely a Nike guy.
Yeah. Ironic. I hope they got him a more durable shoe than the one he had on at Duke that day.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.